From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for May 15th, 2020. Well, COVID-19 certainly has changed how we go about our daily lives. American adults are getting used to working from home, and according to a recent poll, 54% of us would like it to continue, and 75% of us would love the option to do it occasionally. So 54% of us would love to do it every day, and 75% of us would love to do it occasionally. We are still talking about working from home, right? Another poll says that nearly 50% of men say they do most of the homeschooling, while only 3% of women agree. Another way to read that poll is 50% of the guys are lying. And a Kentucky woman cut a hole in the middle of her protective mask. Why? Because she said it made it easier to breathe until she catches the virus. Okay. And finally, a California man forced a tanker truck carrying red wine to pull over. The man wearing only underwear climbed onto the trailer, then started drinking wine right from the tank. Well, the truck driver pulled away with the guy still on the tank drinking wine. He didn't get too far before the cops stopped him. I'm guessing that a 12-step program, he's going to be a little short of 12 steps. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Brian Kelb, Steve Giles, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Got to say, Max, you're the best red man I know. Thanks for those stories. Well, folks, we gave up a few nickels this week. The market's pretty weak, then strong. Dow's down 109 points on Monday, lost a whopping 457 points Tuesday, only to lose another 516 points Wednesday. Thursday, we had a pretty decent rebound, up 377 points, and today we tacked on 60 points. NASDAQ climbed for the week overall. It actually lost, rather, 1.2%, shedding 107 points. NASDAQ closed at 9,015. Broader markets, the S&P Stock Composite 500 shed 2.3%, losing 66 points. The S&P closed at 2,864. Including dividends, the S&P now down 10.7%. Year-to-date, NASDAQ up 0.8%. Year-to-date, that's great. Strength of the tech stocks. Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 646 points this week, shedding 2.7%. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 23,685. Dow now down still 16.3% year to date. Two-thirds of the states now have relaxed restrictions. A lot of folks are worried about, are we reopening too soon? Was it soon enough? You know, unfortunately, the decisions to reopen are not based on science. They're based on politics, ideology, and public pressure. So the epidemiologists are concerned that we're setting ourselves up for the possibility of a second or third wave of infections and deaths. And I think, frankly, that's what the market is trying to figure out right now. Retail sales down a whopping 16.4%. Boy, that was a headline grabber. Biggest two-month decline on record. Industrial production, steepest monthly fall on record. You take a look at first-time claims for unemployment insurance. That's a record. 36.5 million people filed jobless claims in the last 8 weeks. At least the numbers are starting to slow. End of March, we had almost 7 million first-time claims for unemployment insurance. This week, it was roughly 3 million. Finally, retail sales down 16.4% in April. A lot of the pros think that we'll be turning the corner on retail sales in May, as I said, as a lot of states reopen. You know, Brian, let's start with you first. The market seemed to be losing some of their gas. Only to turn around on Thursday on some positive news and some encouragement.
Yeah, you know, Bob, it's always kind of difficult to predict, see things in the short run, but I got to say this week confused me a bunch. You know, the first couple days of the week, I had a sense that maybe Wall Street was waking up to the fact that they may have been a little bit too aggressive, maybe looking a little bit too much past, as you suggest, the potential for things to get worse before they get better. And also, I think, for the onslaught of bad economic news, which we got throughout the week and will get for the next few months, no doubt. So I was surprised quite a bit Wednesday when we turned around, what, 835-point swing. And then today, you know, things settled in a little bit and it ended up not being as bad a week. So I think it's hard in the short run always to see which way the needle's going to go. But I think it's especially difficult right now given so many variables and still so much uncertainty in terms of both how the virus plays out and how the economic damage is digested from here on out.
Kyle, what's your take on the market?
You know, I think you look at, you know, the sell-off earlier in the week, and then in particular, the data that came out yesterday on the employment picture and the data that came out today on retail sales and industrial production. And that data hit, the news, you know, the headlines came out, the market sold off pretty quick in the morning, both Thursday and Friday. And then I think all of a sudden, later in the day Thursday, later in the day Friday, we saw some support, we saw stocks come back. And so it appears as if we've come into a little bit of a range now for the S&P, for the Dow. We're seeing some support in areas that maybe we hadn't seen even a couple of weeks ago. We're seeing some signs that maybe stocks can't run much past where they are right now. And so I think as we're starting to leave first quarter earnings season, as we hit a little bit of a lull now for, you know, really the next 6 weeks on earnings data, you know, we're going to be operating strictly on the economic data. And I think as we've been saying for a while, the economic data is not getting better anytime soon. And so as long as it continues to come in, you know, roughly the way people are expecting, I think you see the markets kind of just trade in this range they've been in. I think when you get an overreaction, potentially like we saw Thursday morning, Friday morning, you're going to see people step back in and you know, take down some deals that they see out there. And so, you know, I'm encouraged by that fact. Obviously, all that depends a lot upon, you know, what happens as states reopen. All that depends a lot upon what the vaccine research winds up with and how quickly that happens. But, you know, at least for now, I think, you know, we're seeing things about the way we expected. We're seeing stocks now start to trade in a range that's a little more normal.
So were you guys encouraged maybe or surprised that banks led kind of the comeback in the last couple of days?
I certainly was. You know, I sold shares of Wells Fargo for a client and was surprised, really astonished to see the hit that bank took the last couple of years, down 50% roughly in 2 years for a major money center bank. That's almost unheard of. So I was surprised, Brian, you know, when the old expression is you borrow a little money, you can't pay it back. It's your problem. You borrow a lot of money, you can't pay it back. It's the bank's problem. And the banks are going to be suffering through all sorts of foreclosures, problems with real estate that can't be rented out, that nobody wants. Everybody's rethinking, you know, how many employees do want to work from home now. That, you know, speaking for our shop, things are going kind of smoothly with most of us working from home to the extent that, you know, as a culture, we're going to have to get together at some point downtown in the offices. But a lot of people are finding pleasantly that working from home is okay. When I look at the money center banks too, Brian, the interest rates are so low, the banks don't make any money. So they've got to set aside just enormous amounts for loan loss reserves. They're going to have to mark to the market the loans that are not receiving any kind of payments. And they like to wait till the last minute to declare loans non-performing because there are different capital requirements as a result. So I think it was a pleasant surprise that the banks came back and, you know, they led the markets. You know, overall, you're talking 3, 4, 5% bounces. Hey, Steve, what's your take on stocks now?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of Kyle's points are right on the money here. We perhaps are stuck in a bit of a channel as the market tries to digest where earnings are going to be, where profits are going to be. Obviously, a decline in GDP in the first quarter of 4.8%. wasn't a surprise to anybody, but we were only closed for really the second half of March. What our earnings number is going to look like after we have an entire quarter worth of shutdown or a slow to return to work, if you will, when we see the earnings numbers come out in July. And I think the market doesn't know what that answer is yet. As much as everybody is out of jobs, 36 million people unemployed, that happened very swiftly. I do not think that those 36 million people are going to be hired back as fast as they lost their jobs, and that's going to be a big hurdle for us to overcome.
Steve, I read a pretty good disconnect on the unemployment. Seeing 80% of the people that have taken first-time claims for unemployment insurance think that they'll be called back, yet employers are suggesting that fewer than half will actually be called back. So there's a pretty good gap between the people that think they're going back to work and the ones that probably aren't. And I think we're going to have to suffer through that for some time.
Well, Bob, you've got a lot of employers that recognize people might be just as efficient at home, or maybe they're even more efficient with fewer employees working from home. Why should they be in any hurry to hire back those workers?
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, it'll take a while before we fully understand the extent of the economic damage. You know, I'm still of the opinion that we'll eventually get a vaccine, maybe more wishful thinking, but from what I read, they expect to get it within about a year and a half. We're in human trials with four different vaccines right now. That's the longest period of time to generate a vaccine is the human trial part. So I'm encouraged by that. And when you look at the economic activity, I was encouraged by the pros forecasting that retail sales are expected to actually go up in May as two-thirds of the states relax restrictions, as I mentioned. You know, here in Wisconsin, court decided, okay, that we can't really shelter in place. We talked about this last week on the podcast about what's going on in Georgia. You know, Georgia reduced their restrictions a week ago Monday, and how many people went out of their house? The restaurants weren't all that busy. And as a result, you know, the politicians can tell you that it's okay to go out and about, but I think a whole lot of people are going to just stay home until they have a better idea of the infection rate, the extent of the infections, when more accurate testing can ultimately take place. But it's pretty ridiculous that there hasn't been a coordinated federal effort, the national level for testing. And even here in Wisconsin, you know, they're trying to lean in towards let local villages and cities and towns decide. Well, after having their health departments decimated by budget cuts for years, they're ill-equipped to make those kinds of decisions. So I think it's going to be up to us, you know, individually to decide really how do you want to go back into society and integrate with other people until they get a vaccine or more accurate antibody tests. And I think for many of us, that'll be slow going. Of course, that all changes quickly when you get a vaccine, which is, of course, the light at the end of the tunnel.
You know, Bob, I think worth pointing out, there's more than 75 vaccines in development right now. We've taken the development timeline down from being measured in years, potentially, to being measured in months for some of these. And so, you know, I think a lot of what we've seen in markets, a lot of what we've seen in terms of economic forecasts is counting on, yeah, we're going to have some vaccine. Maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's a year, maybe it's a year and a half from now, whatever it is. But when you start to predict out what that means, then some kind of return to normalcy, if we can get enough developed to get the vast majority of the population vaccinated. You know, I think that's the catch, though, of course, is that it does depend on one of those vaccines working. It does depend on the ability to produce it in a large enough quantity that it gets out. And so, you know, when we talk about risk and when we talk about, you know, what the potential is, and I think stocks very much are counting on the fact that we return to some semblance of normal at some point in time in the future. Of course, the downside is what happens if these vaccines don't work, or what happens if it takes a little while longer. And so, you know, when we talk about the way that we build portfolios, when we talk about the importance of balance, it's why, you know, we keep going back to, yeah, things are probably going to get better at some point in time in the future, but we have to be able to get through not just the next 6 months or year, because that's what we think it'll take, but potentially 2, 3, 4 years. Because if it takes that long to really get back to some semblance of normal, we need to know that our portfolios can withstand that. And so, you know, I think it just, it gets back to portfolio construction as much as it's, you know, simply what's going on in the world. And I think that's, you know, kind of the role that balance plays for our investors.
Brian, you and I have been through a number of bear markets together. This is clearly the first one that we've ever been through where growth stocks held up better than the rest of the market. I never remember that happening. Yet I look at the performance of some of our growth funds. A couple of them are even positive year-to-date returns compared to some of the value funds that are still down 18, 19, 20% or more. Historically, we used to hide out in value stocks, the slow growers. During difficult times, we'd go try to get some dividends. We'd go into the conservative end of the market, populated by utilities, banks, insurance companies, even the oil and gas sector, to try to get a decent return on the money. And, you know, here, this market has just been the mirror opposite. It's unbelievable to see that.
It's so interesting for me, and I'm sure you as well, to kind of compare what's going on now to the way things have looked over the few decades that we've been doing this. And it's just hard, even I think, if you dial it back to the individual stocks, to differentiate between what you and I might think traditionally as value and growth. And you have companies like MasterCard and Visa, Microsoft, that just don't fall into kind of the traditional thinking that they might have in the past. And some of those companies have excellent balance sheets, they have tons of cash, they have dividends, the growthier issues that wouldn't have in the past anyway seem to be as traditionally growthy, or that's why they're carrying the market now, because literally with billions of dollars in cash, they're the ones that are going to make it through this with some certainty, and also because the businesses they're in are strong and growing. And I mean, just think of what Amazon's done through this thing. It's staggering, hiring 100,000 employees and continuing to expand plants and market share and whatnot. So I think it's just very interesting for me to kind of compare what a value stock looks like now versus what one looked like 10 or 15 years ago even.
Well, you know, the definitions do change over time and the lines are blurred, but you know, for the most part, what populates the value space hasn't really changed much over the years. And it's under pressure. You just don't see that. And I think part of it is the data mining that occurs in the tech stocks, that cash flow has not been interrupted. Spying on us, selling the information, that hasn't been interrupted. The revenue streams haven't really changed. You know, Brian, you cite Amazon, look at Netflix. A lot of people stuck at home watching television. But it's just very different dynamic, and it calls into question the potential for volatility moving forward as tech stocks, now 22% of the market. That's a big number, you guys, way higher than just prior to Y2K. And, you know, where I'm going with this thought is, the profit is there, but I'm not sure the volatility is accurately reflected in the share prices as more and more people pile into the same Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and Netflix trades, which is almost a self-fulfilling circularity of movement, if you will. The stocks are going up because people are putting money in them. As people put money in, they go even higher and they attract even more capital. So there'll be a point, I think, in this recovery, assuming we're heading towards recovery, that the value space will present some fairly attractive bargains where you're looking at not just the oil and gas industry, but insurance companies are under pressure. Health insurance companies aren't making the money. Hospital operators are losing money. Look at the commercial real estate space. Brian, you spent a lot of time researching real estate investment trust over the years. They've been hammered. There's probably going to be some pretty good buys in the REIT space moving forward. That's the kind of stuff that I think are going to be attractive because you're talking about pretty interesting discounts to pretty good franchise situations that are in it for the long term.
You know, Bob, how many times over the years have we heard Warren Buffett get kind of taken to task, and now he's out of touch, and Berkshire Hathaway is getting hammered, and this time it's different and whatnot. And I think what you speak to perhaps is that, you know, value investing, it's been a decades long lagger of growth right now, but there's still a place in your portfolio for it. And one of these days when we least expect it might be the time that circles back to the value side. We'll see.
You know, Kyle, it's even extreme between growth and core holdings, or what Morningstar categorizes as blended, halfway between value and growth. I mean, they've lost almost as much as the value funds have. So, in the past, we've seen some of the blended funds nibble away at the growth stocks and try to become growthier, and that's been their saving grace, I think.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of that, Bob, is just the continued blurring of the lines, not just in terms of, you know, how the funds are investing or how the underlying investments within those funds are, but also, you know, within the stocks that make up that value and growth index. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, the kind of the weight of technology within the broad market indexes. Keep in mind that a lot of the names that people are chasing aren't just technology names even. They're technology centric, but Amazon's a consumer name. It's not a technology specific name. And so it's not as simple anymore as saying, you know, this fits in this basket. And so I think a lot of what's going on when you look at some of the underperformance of the non-growth names is just that those lines have been blurred so much.
But it is as simple as saying that below average PE stocks are lagging the market.
Yes.
I mean, I understand the concept that the lines are blurred, but the definition isn't fuzzy. The definition's not blurred. The definition of a value stock is a below average PE stock. And it seems to me that the lower the PE of your stock, the worse you're doing in the market right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, the more people that are piling into stocks, the higher it seems to push that PE, and yet, you know, people just continue to chase it. And so I think, you know, you look at those growth names and they've just been rewarded by momentum more than anything else. And then, you know, I think the other piece that, you know, we talked about a little bit last week, but that's worth considering, is that it hasn't strictly been value growth. It's also been capitalization based. And so when you look at the larger companies, they've been far more rewarded than the smaller companies have. And that's true in technology. It's true in some of the traditional values. And, you know, going back to a conversation we had earlier, it's especially true in the financials. The large multinational or national banks are doing better than the regional banks are, especially in certain regions, in part because of how diverse their businesses are, and in part because they were sitting on billions in cash. And so if you look at some of those larger banks, you know, something like PNC, which during the financial crisis was able to buy some smaller banks up at 40% of book value, which is a huge discount in the banking world, they're seeing some of those opportunities again to continue to grow their banking business, to buy assets at incredible discounts, because those smaller banks just haven't thrived the way that the bigger banks have. They don't have the kind of capital that the bigger banks have. And that's true in financials. It's true in technology. It's true in healthcare. We've seen some healthcare M&A activity recently. And so I would say, you know, the more that we continue to reward those bigger names, the more those returns are going to run higher there as well.
I'm always intrigued by investors' perceptions versus the reality. I had a pretty good lesson in that early this afternoon talking to clients. I told them through the end of last week they were down 3.8%. She thought they were down 40% or more. She was afraid to look. She was so happy with a 3.8% decline. So I'm always fascinated by, you know, what people think is happening versus in reality what actually is happening. Steve, you talk to clients all day long about the returns and their perceptions. What do you think about that?
I agree with you 100%, Bob. We're so conditioned to see what is happening on the nightly news or what we read on the internet in the morning and superimpose that on our own situations. And when you see a headline that says the market was down 5% today, you automatically assume that your portfolio is going to be down 5%. But this goes back to balance. And when we remind clients that they don't have all their money in, say, the stock market, they're diversified with a mix of bonds, they're diversified with a mix of both value and growth, and they have a broad portfolio that gives them exposure to all sectors of the market, it's very comforting for them to hear us report that they're not doing as badly as what's getting reported. But it also speaks, I think, and it argues for diversification moving forward. This reminder that, yes, the growth stocks that have held up much better this year are providing clients with some positive returns in some areas. Who's to say that in 3 months or 6 months, those value stocks that we might be discouraged by won't be what provides some upside later on because they have become such a good deal. We never want to give up on any one asset class, Bob. It's all about having balance and making sure we're properly diversified across our entire portfolio.
Brian, you and I are big baseball fans. I don't know about you, but I haven't gotten yet to the point where I'm watching South Korean baseball. I guess that's about all there is on television. Have you watched any of those games?
No, I haven't, but I have been revisiting Ken Burns baseball.
Which well, you is, have. Yeah, I've seen that.
Which, by the way, is 24 years old now, if you can imagine that that's been around that long. But it's every bit as good as it was when it came out, and nothing like a little bit of history to remind us that it'll come back at some point in time, right?
It's very hard to go through your springtime without spending time at the ballpark.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.